Welcome to another edition of the Rich Eisen Podcast, presented by Papa John's. Yes, all it took was two episodes of this podcast being broadcast on NFL.com and iTunes all around the planet for us to reel in a big-time sponsor to help give out pizzas to all folks who appear on this podcast. That's how giving the folks of Papa John's and their fresh ingredients are to this here podcast. And it's a big-time podcast today, and allow myself to promote myself. We have got a great lineup. Drew Brees, the most valuable player from last year's Super Bowl, and the king of New Orleans, will be joining us here on the podcast today. Coming off of a loss, so you always got to give props to players who stay true to their word that they're going to show up after they get an L hung on them, as the Atlanta Falcons did. In most heart-wrenching fashion for the Saints, with a bunny of a field goal from the guy, Garrett Hartley, who kicked him into the Super Bowl last year, missing in overtime, allowing the Falcons to come back on the field against a defense that probably thought its day was over, and win that game in the Superdome and take a half-game lead in the NFC South. We'll talk with Drew Brees about that game, about rebounding from that game. I also will, of course, talk about the Super Bowl win and the city of New Orleans with a man who's been so giving of his time and has woven himself into the fabric of that Bayou City. We'll have Drew Brees here on this podcast. My other guest today is a guy who rarely does anything of this sort. It might just be his very first podcast interview ever. None other than Larry David, the creator of Seinfeld, the creator of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the funniest shows perhaps of all time. Certainly Curb is one of my favorite shows. I know a lot of fans out there feel the same way. I'm going to ask LD about Seinfeld, Curb, his beloved Jets, and also set up a couple of, social situations for him to be the arbiter of. As we all know, Larry has some ideas on what's right and what's wrong in our society. And I'm going to give him some hypothetical situations that may have happened to you, and have LD play judge and jury for that. That'll be a lot of fun here on the podcast. That'll also hit some hot topics with The Worm. Jason Worms, our senior producer here at NFL Network. He'll be joined by Drew Olmeyer, a senior bureau producer here at NFL Network, who helps book this podcast as well. They'll be banging around some hot topics that has to, for the moment, right off the bat, include who's 3-0 and who is 0-3 in the National Football League. Only three teams at 3-0, and all of them are surprising. I don't think anybody thought that the Pittsburgh Steelers would be 3-0 without Ben Roethlisberger. A lot of folks thought it would be Byron Leftwich or Dennis Dixon. Now it's Charlie Batch who's getting things done for them. They are 3-0 atop the AFC North. The other 3-0 team in the AFC is not Indianapolis. It's not New England. It is not the Jets. It's not the Chargers. It's Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs are 3-0, and they're the only team in the AFC West above 500. Go figure that. We'll talk about that with in our Hot Topics segment in the middle of the program. And the other 3-0 team is the only 3-0 team in the NFC, and that's the Chicago Bears. And you know what? They deserve it. I know Lion fans are upset at that talk, that they thought they had them dead to rights in week one and that the rule book bailed the Bears out and that the Lions should have won that game. And you may be right, but rules are rules, and that's what happened. You are what you are, and the Bears are the toughest, most stout run defense in the league. They've got Jay Cutler, who at times, as we all know, can look shaky, and he did on Monday night, but he got it done when he needed to get it done, and that Bears defense created issues for Green Bay. It created many of the flags that Green Bay had thrown on them. Julius Peppers had the best defensive performance of any player already in week number three, and he may just be the best offseason acquisition. Anquan Boldin had a great week for the Baltimore Ravens. He perhaps is the best offseason player acquired via trade, but Peppers is the best free agent signing. I mean, for sure. He had Mark Tauscher all jumpy, created a handful of false start penalties, personally did, and then the blocked field goal that helped the Bears to victory. That was sort of the margin of difference on Monday night. We'll talk about that game in a little bit in the Hot Topic segment, because I had some issues with the way Mike McCarthy used a challenge flag towards the end of the game, and also what he did in the last minute of the game that perhaps a lot of Packer fans are scratching their heads about today. But no team is more disappointing after 3 weeks than the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, you could say any other team that's 0-3, Cleveland or the Lions, are also disappointing. But let's be honest, nobody expected San Francisco to be 0-3. This was supposed to be their year to take the NFC West, what with Pete Carroll changing over half the roster in Seattle, Arizona, having their franchise quarterback dancing with the stars this year. This is San Francisco's year. This was it. Frank Gore and Crabtree, Vernon Davis. The question was Alex Smith. Alex Smith looked super last Monday night in Kansas City and in Seattle. Well, not so much. Not so much. The Niners have already changed offensive coordinators now. And Jimmy Ray, the offensive coordinator, came out and said on Tuesday, hey, I only did what the coach wanted me to do. I'm only running the type of offense that the coach wants to run. Now the coach has run him out of town, and they're 0-3. And only three teams in the last 20 years have started 0-3 and made the playoffs. 3% of all teams that start 0-3 make the playoffs. And it's not as if the NFC West has a bunch of sad sacks in it. I know, again, you might not be impressed with the way Arizona's played or Seattle's played, but they're both 2-1, and they're both got legs up on the 49ers after 3 weeks. And the Niners are in trouble. They are absolutely in a state of shock. And hopefully, not, you know, their fans, for their fans on their behalf, it's hopefully not a state of disrepair. And you have to think that that season may be, if, forget about on the brink, could be done. Could be done. And I know there are 13 games left. But when you start 0-3, it is tough to dig out of that hole. And I don't see enough playmakers doing what they're supposed to be doing on that offensive side of the ball for them to be able to go ahead and make the playoffs, even in that weak division. But the Falcons have got to be feeling good about themselves after 3 weeks right now in the NFC East. The Eagles have got to be feeling good about themselves. So much for the big hoo-ha about making the switch to Vic and how it was done. It doesn't matter now. He's out of his mind. First ever 3-touchdown pass, 1-touchdown run game of his career. And the Eagles are the only team above 500 in the NFC East. And that is the way the Eagles will welcome Donovan McNabb into their house, with McNabb having come off of a stunning loss in St. Louis, and Vic having that Philadelphia house seemingly in order. They got to feel good about themselves, Philadelphia. And the other teams that aren't 3-0 to be feeling good about themselves has to be the New York Jets. Mark Sanchez, back-to-back 3-touchdown games with no picks at all so far this season. And they haven't had Calvin Pace on defense. They haven't had Santonio Holmes yet on offense. Braylon Edwards sits the first quarter as his punishment, comes out and runs a 67-yard touchdown in. Jets have to be feeling good about themselves, although they go to Buffalo this week, and you do throw the records out whenever that happens. So that's a potential trap game, if you will, for the Jets before the Vikings come into their house with Favre coming off of a bye week. But Rex Ryan won't have that as a trap game. It's a division game. They always know how tough it is up in Buffalo. And if the Jets win that, they're already 3-0 in division with two of their road games in the division out of the way. They've got to be feeling good about themselves. So I'm feeling good about myself. We're giving out pizza to whoever comes on this show. I got a sponsor. I got Larry David coming up on the show. But let's get to our first guest right now. He is the MVP of the Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints, and he is one of the best guys in the business. And I'm so thrilled to have him here on the Rich Eisen podcast presented by Papa John's. Drew Brees joining us on the program. How are you there, Drew?
I'm great, Rich. How are you, man?
I'm fine. The how are you is more than just, you know, how are things going. How are you feeling? Did you hurt yourself last week?
No, I mean, I got banged up a little bit, but I'll be just fine. Just looking forward to getting back on the field. Anytime, you know, you lose a tough game like that, you can't get back on the field fast enough to try to, you know, redeem yourself and get a good taste, you know, in your mouth again.
Right. So Saints Nation can exhale, in other words.
Yeah, it's always tough to come off one like that.
Right. No, I'm talking about we're reading about MRIs and stuff like that, I guess, just as a precautionary measure. But you're fine, and you're ready to go this weekend is what you're saying.
I absolutely will be. Yeah, I mean, I obviously took every measure possible just to make sure everything was good, and everything's good. So.
Right. So, yeah, how was it, I guess, losing that? It's such a difficult spot to be in, losing and it being somewhat out of your control, Drew. What was that like for you standing on the sidelines and watching that all play out for you this past week?
Uh, Well, it's tough. I mean, anytime, all you ask for is just a chance to win in the end. And despite how the whole game goes, I mean, there's going to be ebb and flow. There's going to be back and forth, especially when we're playing against a divisional opponent like the Atlanta Falcons, who, you know, historically, especially just in the last few years here with Mike Smith as their head coach and Sean Payton as our head coach, we've had a lot of close games. I mean, every game we've played with them has been a fourth quarter type game. And so, sure enough, you know, this one came down to the wire. You know, we were able to tie it up with a field goal to send it into overtime, and then, you know, got the ball after our defense stopped and drove down to the 10-yard line. And, you know, you feel pretty confident that, you know, with a 27-yard field goal or 29-yard field goal that, you know, you got the game won. But unfortunately, you know, you make some and you miss some. And unfortunately, that was just one of those times where, you know, we missed it, and then they went down and beat us with a field goal of their own.
Right. What do you say to your kicker after the game?
You know, keep your head up and bounce back. You know, we're going to need you to make a lot of big kicks down the road here. And I've got a lot of confidence in Garrett Hartley. And, you know, this is just one of those instances where I think it happens to the best of us. And if you can remember back to last year, he missed a kick, a game-winning kick, very similar to that one against Tampa Bay at home. And then little did we know that 4 weeks later,
right,
he would have to make that exact same kick in overtime to send us to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I was watching the game. I was watching the game with Dion, and I asked him the same question I asked you. I said, "What do you say to your kicker after that?" And he says, "Nothing. He's the guy that kicked you into the Super Bowl last year. So, you know, he's made big kicks before. It's just you just feel for somebody like that. It's like one of those Southwest commercials. Like you want to get away. I mean, he would love to just find the nearest exit, I imagine, and just
It's encouragement, but also, you know, kicker's a tough job, you know, and you're either the hero or the goat, and you're gonna miss a few, and I think that it's how you respond from those, and he's shown in the past that he responds very well from that, and so I hope, obviously we all hope that and have confidence in the fact that he's gonna bounce right back.
Marshall Faulk's been talking about, when we mentioned the Saints, he's been talking for the last several weeks that your biggest challenge is gonna be seeing everybody's A game every single week because you are the defending Super Bowl champs, that everybody is going to measure themselves against you because you are the defending Super Bowl champs. Over the first 3 weeks of this season, have you seen that? Have you felt that?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, I feel like by no means do I feel like we've played our best football, you know, as a team. I feel like there's still a lot of things we are working on and bringing together, and you know, we have not played a complete game by any stretch at this point, but I do feel like we're getting everybody's best performance, and you know, every one of the of our games here the first 3 weeks of the season has been a fourth quarter game where, you know, defense or offense or somebody's having to come up with a big play, a big stop, a big completion, a big special teams play, whatever it is, in order to win the game. And you know, we've been able to do that for the most part, you know, with the exception of, you know, this past week, but and I know there's going to be plenty more of those in the future, but I feel like we're battle-tested, you know, very early on. You know, a lot of times you wait for a couple games like this and see how your team's going to respond, and, you know, if you're able to pull these tight games out. And for the most part, over the last 2 years, we've been able to do that, and I think that's helped us build confidence. And we just know whenever we get in those situations, you know, we're going to find a way to win.
What's Sean Payton going to be like this week, you think, coming off of your first loss of the season, wanting to make sure that that not even an ounce of complacency might seep in to a defending Super Bowl championship season? Because obviously what everybody always talks about a defending Super Bowl champion is that the defense is always a battle with complacency. What do you think the coach is going to be about this week?
Well, coming off a loss, I mean, it's, hey, we got a lot of things to improve upon. You know, there's even though we did have a chance to win in the end with a field goal, the game didn't have to be close. You know, I mean, there was a lot of things that we did or did not do that held us back, and so let's work on improving those things and just making sure that, you know, we're constantly getting better. You know, you're never staying the same. You're either getting better or you're getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And let's make sure we're getting better.
And what do you feel your role as a team leader is in this situation, Drew?
Well, lead by example, first and foremost. You know, I've got a routine throughout the week in regards to my preparation.
What is that?
What I'm doing.
What is that?
But don't. Well, I can't give away my secrets.
Yeah. I mean, this is only the internet. It's like nobody's listening, right? It's only the World Wide Web. But okay,
no, so I mean, it's hey, getting here early, making sure I'm the first car in the parking lot, and so everybody that comes in, they see my car and they know that I'm here. I'm working. I'm trying to get better, and I'm trying to put this team in the best position to win. And you know, I've got what I'm doing in the weight room, what I'm doing in the training room, what I'm doing in the film room, when I do a practice, you know, after practice. I mean, all those things that put me into that mindset of, you know, so when game day comes around, I know that I've done everything I can to put myself in the best position to succeed and help us win, and that just gives you ultimate confidence.
Your focus and your preparation is becoming the stuff of legend, Drew. The America's Game feature that the NFL Network ran this year about your championship year last year, the story that leapt out at me and a lot of other people was how one week in your bye week, Coach Payton comes in and sees you out on the field going through your reps as if it was a game day. Where did that come from in your mind, Drew? Walk us through that process, why you decided to do something like that.
I just try to stay with it, you know, and don't, it's hard during the season to ever relax. I mean, you're always just so focused on the next opponent and the next game, and so the bye week comes around and it's like you don't know what to do with yourself.
Mm.
And so I just feel like it was appropriate to still stay in the moment and, you know, get out there and keep my mind working. And so it's almost like playing the game in your head. You might not be doing it physically, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it mentally. And so much of the quarterback position is a mental game and just visualizing every possible scenario or situation and just making sure you're prepared for it. And that way, you know, the next week comes around and you're not skipping a beat.
Now, I know this may be apples and oranges, but if I had the day off from my job and I told my wife, I'm going to go into work today and run through the NFL Total Access as if the cameras are on, she'd look at me like I was a little crazy. What did Brittany say? What did your wife say when you said, "Hey, I'm going in to do this sort of thing"?
Rich, you're such a natural. You know, so
yeah, and you're not, Drew. I mean, yeah, you know.
Some guys have to work at it. You know, you just
yeah. Well, I got to make sure my car's in the parking lot when everybody gets in here. You know what I mean? But seriously,
right.
What does your wife say when you're like, "I'm going to go on the field and I'm going to act like there's a game going on today"?
I don't think I get into the specifics as to exactly what I'm doing.
Oh, I see. I'm just going to work, is what you're saying.
I'm going in. I got some work to do. So she knows what that means. She knows that there's, you know, crazy preparation.
Right.
She probably doesn't want to know.
No, I know, but she's been along for the ride with you for so long. There's a story I heard. Is this a true story that when you were rehabbing your shoulder after you injured it in your final game with the Chargers, did you move in to Birmingham, Alabama, to an apartment nearby Dr. James Andrews? Is that a true story? To rehab close name?
Brittany's parents, my wife's parents, mm-hmm. lived in Birmingham.
Okay.
At the time. And so I moved into their guest bedroom. This is what I did. And
right.
My father-in-law drove me to rehab for the first probably 2 or 3 months. And then after that, I was good enough where I could drive and, you know, I was okay with my shoulder to drive and everything. And so then I would start driving myself, but I would still, you know, they were making me breakfast, they were making me dinner, mm-hmm. they were taking care of me, you know, making sure my ice machine was all filled up and, mm-hmm. you know, pumping cold water all over my shoulder to make sure I was, I mean, I felt like a kid again. I felt like, my parents were kind of waiting on me, you know, mm-hmm. hand and foot and just whatever I needed, and they were taking care of me. So it was for 4 months, and my wife too, so I owe him big time for that.
Do you ever think about those times? I mean, talk about a fragile moment in your career right there, Drew. I mean, you blow out your shoulder. You're a free agent, right? And
yeah.
You're trying to figure out where you're going to go next. And do you ever think about those moments as you are now the Super Bowl MVP, clearly, widely viewed as an elite quarterback in the National Football League, up there with the Peyton Mannings, Tom Brady? I mean, there's no question about that anymore now. And you are forever the king of New Orleans. You can come back when you're 80 years old, knock on wood, and you will be able to get you'll get me a reservation at a table in that town. Do you ever think about those moments compared to where you are right now?
You know, I guess I have reflected back on, you know, the journey a few times, especially after winning the Super Bowl. I mean, that's, you have to take time to, you know, enjoy it. And part of what made that so special was everything that, we had been through up to that point, you know, and how hard we had to work, and, you know, the state of New Orleans, you know, at the time, just being completely devastated when we first got here, and then to what it is now, where you just, you feel like the city has just been resurrected, and, I mean, it's such an unbelievable place, such a unique place, and so I, an opportunity that I was given here by Sean Payton and, you know, the Saints organization, I don't know, everything happens for a reason, and it's at the time when you think that something's happening, and, you know, why is this happening to me, why now, this is the worst thing that ever could have happened to me, and then I look back on that shoulder injury now, and the fact that it brought me to New Orleans, and I say, you know, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me. It's interesting how the direction life leads you at times.
Update me on, I saw firsthand when I was in town for the opener this year. It just, the town is just, it's so alive, and it's so, the fabric between the town and the Saints is just a bond that so few sports teams have with their cities. Update us on the works that you're doing there in New Orleans and where things stand, not only with Katrina, I mean, this oil spill as well, devastating ways of life, basically overnight. Can you update us on your works within the community there and where they currently stand?
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously, when you thought that, you know, this region couldn't stand another hit, mm-hmm. you know, the oil spill happens, and just the way that that's affected not only New Orleans but the entire Gulf Coast, and it's just it put so many people in yet another tough situation. You just have so many people in need, and I think for us, what has always been our stance, you know, my wife and I and our foundation is we're trying to do our part. And, you know, we're trying to leave everything better than when we found it. And I think in a lot of ways, New Orleans has come back better, has come back stronger than it was before the storm. When you look at the public education system, the emergence of the charter schools, the infrastructure, I think the fact that over the last 4 years, you know, we've had a lot of primetime games in New Orleans, whether it's Monday Night Football or playoff games, that kind of thing. I think it's brought a lot of attention to mm-hmm. New Orleans, and therefore, you know, tourism. The tourism industry is the biggest part of, you know, obviously, the economy down here. So that's kind of where it stands. You know, I mean, we still have a lot of work to do. But we're on our way back, and you know, just still have a lot of work to do. But obviously, with the oil spill and everything else too, that's been another shot in the arm. But people are banding together, and if there's a group of people that can come back from it, it's the people of the Gulf Coast, the people in New Orleans.
No doubt about it. I mean, the people there were just so fired up for that home opener and just for football and about their way of life coming back and being vibrant, and it was neat to see. And, of course, obviously, you guys winning the Super Bowl put so much proper attention on the town. I want to ask you about the Super Bowl, just one question. What was it like when you heard from Sean Payton in that locker room at halftime that we're going to go on sides at the start of that third quarter?
Well, we knew it was going to happen at some point because he told us before the game it's happening.
He told you before the game we are definitely going on sides.
Oh, yeah, all week long. All week long we knew. I mean, we all knew it was called ambush and it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was just all about timing, you know, and when they might least expect it and when America would least expect
the
it.
Planet Earth least expected.
Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, I think you picked the perfect time. Obviously, it was a huge momentum changer. We felt like we had some momentum going in at halftime, and then we're able to take that onside and score a touchdown. You know, the rest is history.
But did you just come out, stand on the sidelines, and try and act like this was just a normal? I mean, did you try to do your part?
Yeah,
just in case anybody
totally.
Was watching you on the other sideline, that it was just going to be a normal kickoff.
You always wonder about that if somebody's going to see anything different on the sideline,
right. uh-huh.
and it might tip them off. But I kind of went through my normal stretches, just mm-hmm. kind of like,
right.
you know, la di da. Don't look at me. I'm just doing my normal routine.
There you go. I
but,
like it.
Obviously, in my mind, I'm thinking we got to get this ball.
And the other thing that I always remember about the Super Bowl, certainly with you, other than your play, is you with your kid, you with your boy.
Yeah.
You with Baylen, man, just up there on the podium, him with his headsets, you know, the earmuffs, the big old earmuffs with the confetti coming down. That was like out of a comic book. And that's a dream moment for a dad with a little boy, too. I've got a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
I try to repeat the confetti moment, but it's not the same thing.
That's one of your visualization
yes.
techniques with
yes.
the,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it is.
That'll forever be one of the greatest moments of my life.
How could it not be, right? I mean, that's... Yeah. How old is he at the time? One?
He
right?
was 1 year old, yeah. He just turned one.
It's his first ever Super Bowl being on planet Earth, and he's up there on the podium already.
Not that first year of his life.
Okay.
Getting a chance to experience that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's so special. And that was something, obviously, I'll remember forever. And
that's great.
My wife's pregnant with another little boy, which will be due.
That's right.
Any day now.
And any day.
So
any day now.
We've got high expectations. We got, you know, we got to find a way to go in another one so that that little guy can experience the same thing.
Wow, you took the two dads seriously, Drew.
Absolutely.
You're populating the two dad nation right now.
Absolutely.
How are you with me with fatherhood? I'm crying at Walmart commercials now. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, totally. It changes you, man.
It is. I mean, everybody, you always tell people always tell you before you're a dad, oh, this is going to be completely different. You have no idea. And the truth is, you really do not have any earthly idea about it.
Yeah, totally.
You got any tips about expecting a second for somebody like myself, Drew?
Well, you know, they talk to you about, you know, preparing your, mm-hmm. your first child, mm-hmm. you know, to be a brother and.
Right.
You know, how, I don't know, obviously, you know, you have a two-year-old. My little guy's 20 months old now, so
right.
he's close to two. But, I mean, they don't get it. You know, they don't know that their world's about to change. You know, the big thing, though, is obviously they're not going to be getting as much attention as they were before.
Because
right now, the world revolves around them, and then all of a sudden, number two comes. And,
right.
You know, there's obviously, typically, it's your wife that's spending the majority of the time with, you know, the newborn, and then it's probably you and I that are having to pick up the slack with you know, the oldest. And
right.
So the way I look at it for me and you is it's just more bonding time with our older one.
Right. Right now for me, I'm beginning, the daddy part's really beginning to hit home right now. The two-year-old, you know what I mean, when he's able to catch a ball or throw it or stuff like that. But the bottom line is if he feels left out, there's always Elmo for him. You know what I mean? Elmo's always there for him.
Always his friend.
When are you doing Sesame Street? Have they asked you? They had to have asked
you. No, that's still on the bucket list, buddy.
The bucket list. Well, because, I mean, I know you're doing you're everywhere now. You are everywhere. You just did a GQ shoot today, right? That's what I was told. You're GQ.
Yep.
I saw you on a DayQuil commercial. Are you promoting DayQuil now?
That was with my wife. That was a fun deal.
Yeah, DayQuil, Drew Brees for DayQuil. You're with Sanchez and the Verizon commercial. Look, you're a conglomerate now.
Hey, we've gone global.
I don't even know who you are. I don't even know who you are anymore, Drew Brees.
Same guy.
And that's the beauty of it, Matt. That's the beauty of it. And that's what I wanted to hopefully get across to some folks who are listening to this conversation today, because I've known you for a while, and I couldn't be, like I told you when you came to the Total Access set after the Super Bowl, I could not have been more happy for you and your family, and I just wanted to just say that, and I appreciate you coming on this podcast, Drew.
Absolutely, man. I'm happy to. You're the best, Rich. Thanks.
Thank you. Same to you. That is Drew Brees, the Super Bowl MVP from the New Orleans Saints, joining us here on the Rich Eisen podcast presented by Papa John's. When we come back, we have all sorts of hot topics to talk about with the Worm. Jason Wormser and another one of the folks here from NFL Network who I'm excited to introduce you to. But that was Drew Brees here on the podcast. Very excited. And Larry David waiting in the wings. Don't move.
Get on the field with all the sights and sounds from inside the game.
It's a hell of a job.
Two nights.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Two shows you can't miss.
That's the last one.
Get your field pass with NFL replay and sound effects.
My goodness, what a play!
Tuesday and Wednesday starting at 8, only on NFL Network.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen podcast presented by Papa John's.
Pizza! I love pizza!
The Worm
is
in the house.
I heard there's pizza coming.
For the good people at Papa John's sponsoring this broadcast, everybody who appears on this show gets pizza.
I like pizza.
Let me tell you.
Is there going to be pizza every week?
James, well, I don't know if you should be. Your trainer would appreciate it.
No. Apparently
everybody who appears gets pizza every week. So you're going to get a pizza every week.
But I would give the pizza out.
Oh, because you're a giving man.
I am a giver.
I'm
a lover.
This is a senior producer here at NFL Network, Jason Wormser, a.k.a. The Worm, becoming a regular here on the Rich Eisen podcast, talking about hot topics in the National Football League. Joining us this week, senior bureau producer, helps book this show, good friend of mine, and also back in the day, the head PR director of the L.A. Extreme in the XFL, Drew Omar. Here on the Rich Eisen podcast.
Tommy Gunn. We had Tommy Gunn on that team.
Tommy Maddox?
And we won the only championship.
So did He Hate Me ever come into the house?
We played He Hate Me twice.
did He Hate Me get
he
you?
He did, actually. He returned a kick for a touchdown.
He
had some good games.
Sort of like Leon Washington.
That's right. That's right.
You guys in the LA Extreme. So let's talk about some hot topics around the National Football League, guys, starting with the 3-0 teams in the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers, well, I don't think anybody thought that this would happen with the question of who's going to be at quarterback, Dixon or Leftwich. As it turns out, Charlie Batch was the savior this past week. Steelers at 3-0. The only NFC team at 3-0 being the Chicago Bears after the Monday night win against the Green Bay Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Who would have thought it?
At 3-0. Jason Wormser, your thoughts? You have nuggets. You told me you
have nuggets. Well, there's three reasons why.
Okay.
Okay. One, defense. Mm-hmm. All three teams have held their opponents under 17 mm-hmm. on average.
Right.
All three teams have had a guy return a ball for a touchdown, so they have a special teams touchdown.
Yes.
And I think the other thing is they create turnovers. They're all plus on the plus side of the turnover ratio.
Well, I'll tell you what Kansas City has. So everybody thinks they're a fluke. Drew, this team has playmakers. The Kansas City Chiefs have guys who can make plays, which you need in the National Football League to win.
Well, one of the things they've done already is they've got such athletic, they got such talent on that team. Mm-hmm. McClusters and Charles and Eric Berry's got speed. These are young, athletic guys that they're building a core on. It's an exciting team. Just checking their schedule, though, what does the National Football League have in score for the Chiefs?
I have that answer for you here, Drew.
Hit me.
Thanks to Worm's handy-dandy, not-yet-laminated all-in-one schedule that you have here in your pocket schedule. They're on a bye this week. Then they're at Peyton Manning. How you doing?
Hello.
And then they're at Matt Schaub. How you doing?
Right.
Okay. So that's potentially 3-2.
The defensive line's been so good.
And you want to talk about playmakers, too. Moyaki, that kid had the play of the week, right? The one-handed grab.
All those cats that they drafted when Peterson was GM, mm-hmm. all those cats are finally Tom Ali had 3 sacks. All these guys are starting to play.
Peterson. You're giving Peterson credit? Okay.
Yeah.
And then they're home for Jacksonville, home for Buffalo, then at Oakland, at Denver.
Very, very
so that I mean, if you take a look at this stuff, you give them the home wins because it's tough to win in Arrowhead when the place is filled up and people are crazy nuts.
Yeah.
That would make them 5-2.
Yeah.
And then at Oakland, at Denver, maybe they split that.
Yeah.
That's 6-3.
So wait a minute.
That's
6-3. So you're painting a world.
I'm painting a world.
In which KFC Chiefs win the AFC West. Is that what you're doing?
Listen. The way San Diego's playing, you can't just they're not dorming here. You know what I mean? I mean, their special teams is Patrick Creighton called out the special teams this week.
I
mean, he's fresh to the team.
Right.
Marcus McNeil's coming back, so that's going to be a different story. I don't know what they're planning on doing with Vincent Jackson. I mean, this makes absolutely no sense to me.
I mean, Worm, it's over, right?
What?
Vincent Jackson.
Definitely
he's shooting up this year?
Definitely over.
Do you think so?
He's not coming back. A.J. Smith, all he does.
I don't know about that.
A.J. Smith holds
grudges. I don't know about that.
And he holds grudges.
I think, again, when his suspension's over, you're going to start hearing in the ether the Vikings again. I really think so. Because I think they're going to be desperate at that point. I think the Vikings really need him in the worst way.
Well, if they get Rice back and...
But Rice has got a hip injury, man. I mean, it's not like he's coming back from a hamstring here. He had surgery on his hip. And that is in baseball world, A-Rod fans, you all know that. That's not a given.
I don't see how you can make that deal, though, if you're the Vikings. There's no way AJ's going to make it comfortable for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look like you got robbed.
Right. There's a lot of money.
Let's get to the Sunday Nighter. The Sunday Nighter, because, Drew, you are a big fan of the J-E-T-S.
Or it's better known as the Green Mechanical Bird.
The Green Mechanical Bird is your nickname for him.
GMB.
Your thoughts on your Jets looking as good as they have over the last 2 weeks?
It's exciting. I mean, as a fan, all you can hope for is that you have a team on the field that you can look forward to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
To have Sanchez the last two games play the way he has.
Where did that come from, though?
Six TDs.
I mean,
and
he
no
looked
picks.
So lost in week one. I mean, I know you can count it against the Ravens.
But why is that such an anomaly? That I mean, the Ravens brought the kitchen sink. It was their first game. Mm-hmm. He played like the dog of dew. But this is extremely exciting when you also factor in that four of our best players, three to return, mm-hmm. the cavalry's coming. Mm-hmm. And the defense was going to lead this team, and now it looks like there's signs of life on the offense. I mean, Sean Green is—he's not an afterthought, mm-hmm. but LT is certainly—he
looks great. Been amazing. We talked about that on the segment last week.
Been
he looks super.
He's got a chip on his shoulder. He wants to show AJ Smith
right
that you're no good. You're not,
right.
So you're not so smart.
So the Dolphins, guy. Though, is your
mammal.
I got to figure
aquatic
this out.
Mammal.
The aquatic mammal.
Because
we'll get to your G-men in a minute.
Yes.
But where does the Dolphins rank?
1A.
On your, I don't understand.
Well, I grew up in South Florida.
Right.
I went to many, I mean many, many games.
In the Orange Bowl. Okay,
many.
Right.
I was at the incredible 1981 divisional playoff game.
Why are you shaking your head, Drew?
And
Rich, this
what?
Breaks what are you every talking? Rule.
No rule. What are you talking about? No.
You cannot.
When mammal
I
plays
see what the rule
G-men,
is
there's no rules. Mammal plays G-men. It's G-men.
G-men okay? Trumps mammal. This is like rock
yes.
beat. Is
yes.
this rock beat scissors
yes.
or?
Hold okay. on here. Hold
you
on. I grew up in South Florida. My brother, my oldest
you
brother,
have two
was
wives.
Well, yeah, on some shows.
Are you,
some shows.
Are you accusing Worm of being an NFL polygamist?
I am not a polygamist.
Is that what's going on right now?
I think it's time. I think it's time to maybe.
I like mammal, okay? I like the mammal.
But Worm, you can't be passionate about
wait, hold on. Why not? Why not?
Why not?
That is what a fan is. You are passionate about one team. You root for your team. You stick through thick and thin with your team. You can't. If you have two teams, then you have another option. If your one team's not doing well, then you jump to the other team.
Not
that's
really.
Not being a true
I'm
fan.
Not going to sit there like, oh, if the Dolphins decide to make a run and go to the Super Bowl and all, I'll be happy. Am I going to go like, I'm going to wear shirts and hats and fly banners around? No.
But where am I thinking?
Am I going to put a Chad Haney picture in my office?
Is there anybody else
no,
here?
The answer is no.
Is there anybody else here at NFL Network that has two teams? I don't know of anybody else in our shop that has, option B. I don't understand.
That's their problem.
But where we've all seen, I mean, it's
a very
complex lore of how you root during
hold
games.
On. It's a very complex thing about my rooting interests. It is it's a family thing for my brother. It goes way back. And
but then
don't
you have to choose at some point?
No.
If it's about
the day, I told you, the day to choose is when Mammal plays G-Men, and they play every 4 years, and I make it very clear on how I stand.
And it's the G-Men.
Guys,
so
this is going back
the 3 years
25
in between,
years.
You go into every Sunday with two options.
It has gone back. This nonsense has gone back 20. You're not the first, by the way. I have fraternity brothers who keep yelling at me. This is going back
as
25 years.
See, now
25 years
as,
or more.
As somebody who sits next to you watching games
yes.
every
yes.
Sunday here.
Does he root differently?
Do I root differently?
We've been watching games together for like
Seven,
5 years.
5 or 6 years.
Because
yeah.
we used to, when we first started, we had that conference room across the way. So it was, I think, year two or year three of our network
yeah.
where we started watching on stage
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Right? So I've been sitting next to you for 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dolphins do get you a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit.
And when they lose, you're well.
Yeah.
The G-men, though, with you,
I
mean, this past week against the Titans, you were in full Tourette's mode.
Well, there was a 7-year-old.
What was the highlight? There was
a 7-year-old.
I
brought in my nephew, okay, who is now, he's now.
14, 15?
No, he's 15? He's now 16.
16.
He's turning,
wow.
yeah, 19,
remember,
he's 16.
He was like
I know that.
You said he was 7?
Okay, he's now
no.
16. He's
no.
now 16.
He knows.
He's, so he knows when he comes in.
Exactly
he's known for years when he comes in NFL Network, you got to have the earmuffs on with Worm. You got to have the earmuffs. Okay, but now I brought in a 9-year-old.
Right.
A 9-year-old.
And well, you didn't tell me.
Quarter,
I
quarter.
Did not know the 9-year-old was there.
I think it's personal foul number 3 this week by the Giants.
And Worm said?
F-bomb this.
It was no.
No. And I'm like, Worm, there's a 9-year-old back here. And what did you say to me?
Get him out of here.
No, you didn't say get him out of here. You said, that's, quote unquote, that's his fault.
That's his fault.
Quote unquote, that's his fault.
We're blaming 9-year-old.
9-year-old for being here.
Yeah. First of all, did not know he was there.
Apparently, that's his fault.
But that's his fault.
That's
collateral damage.
You know exactly what you're getting when you come. You know, everybody knows. There should be a warning. You should make that. There should be a sign. You sign a waiver.
Beware of worm.
There are wild noises that come from many people because everyone has their own little team.
That's true. Everybody's
going to be
lots of
noises.
Fiefdoms. There's lots of fiefdoms. Lots of people being passionate, and, but only one.
I think when you fumble inside the five twice or throw an interception and have a turnover twice, you have
four personal fouls,
11 penalties, 471 yards, and no punts. 471 yards and no punts. Who has ever done that?
I don't know.
And scored 10 points in the history of National Football
League. Apparently, that was the 9-year-old's fault too.
His fault.
9-year-old's fault. I think that's. By the way, this leads us perfectly to the soundbite of the week.
Yes.
Mike Del Tufo, hit the cart, please, for everybody here.
They are held accountable. They've been told that they do not have the freedom to hurt our football team, to take actions which hurt our team. Penalties lose games. They know that. They've been told that. They all know what the repercussions are of losing the turnover battle. They all understand that. It's a team that had 7 turnovers a week ago and had none today. It is frustrating. But it's my fault. It's my responsibility. Put it on me. But we have 13 games to go, and obviously we've got to improve.
Worm, your thoughts on your coach taking responsibility? Does that mean anything to you, the fan?
I think it tore him a new one in the locker room.
Well, here's the deal with him. Here's what I think the problem is here, is that when they were so successful with their Super Bowl championship team, he had that council of elders, whatever he had. The leader, Strahan Pierce, right?
They got rid of it.
What do you mean they got rid of it?
He doesn't have it anymore.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have the guys to fill the room that has that. You know, at least he had that council could actually leave the room and do his bidding for him.
Right.
Sort of the way that the Patriot Way guys could do that for Belichick.
All the guys.
Who are those guys? There are no guys like that on the
Justin
Giants.
Justin Tucker's a quiet guy. Eli's a quiet guy. The only guy who's a loudmouth is 27, and he's garbage, and he's going to be off the team next year anyway.
Jacobs is garbage. We've started to hear.
It's over. It's over for him.
Because in the minute he threw the helmet.
It's been over. He almost got it. He got into a fight. Remember he had a first down? Remember he ran? He cut back.
Last week, he made
a nice cutback at 9 yards, first down. He gets into a scuffle with 72.
He's just an angry guy.
It's like, enough.
But for the first time, we started to hear that Coughlin's team is undisciplined.
Yeah.
Like, how is that spin?
That's true.
Yeah.
How can you have an undisciplined...
Well, I mean, that could be the end of him. And Bettis is basically...
That means that his message is...
The bus is out there this week, writing, blogging, talking about... Cowher wants to come back, and I think the Giants are a perfect situation.
Power!
And you're fired up.
But
you're only 1-2, Worm. You're only 1-2. You got the Bears this Sunday
Which should be a huge letdown for the Bears.
Why?
Giants.
Dude, they came off their biggest rival.
Short week.
They shouldn't have won the game. They won a game.
What do you mean they shouldn't have won?
It was a fluke. Complete fluke last night.
What are you talking about?
18 penalties.
Yeah, but Peppers called a quarter of them because he's such a beast.
Cutler
threw 3 balls that were intercepted. 2 were intercepted and turned over by Penley. 1 was dropped.
He is awful. It was just
weird.
Cutler. That was
2006 Bears. No offense at all. Got a special teams touchdown. Defense made a play or 2. That's it.
Who went to the Super Bowl that year?
I understand.
Okay.
One of the worst NFC teams ever to go to the Super Bowl.
Bottom line is this. This is my thought on that game. That Green Bay made way too many mistakes. And it's not just the 18 flags, by the way, because people are talking 17. 18 was the 18 banned on the field flags that happened because they kept on lateraling it forward in that last play of the game. How in the world do you kick it to Devin Hester twice? After the first time, the punter kicked him and he damn near ran it back. You saw Mike McCarthy go to the punter and say something. Now, how does he kick it to him again? That's another one. Now, this is our pet peeve. We've talked about this for years, the three of us, and everyone else, Muriano, Barty, who's already appeared in this podcast, and other guys who are going to come on, is challenging.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay? Challenging replays. Mike McCarthy has a challenge with 2 minutes and change to go. He's got 3 timeouts left. The Bears just got the ball right in front of him around midfield. So you got to sit there and think, I might need these 3 timeouts. I have a 2-minute warning, too. I need to get the ball back. Because Robbie Gould is not going to miss more often than not. And he challenges anyway. after it has been shown coast to coast in high definition on ESPN that this is a conclusive call on the field. How does this happen? Do they not have replay in the coaches' booths upstairs? How do they not have ESPN on?
I mean, understood it, but they're looking at, aren't they looking at something from the truck? So they're only looking at the replays.
But I'm sitting on my couch and seeing
it. I understand that, but that's what I'm saying is I've never truly understood what they see.
I've asked Mariucci this question. We've asked Mariucci this question many times.
Right.
And it's just like, what in the world happens? Isn't there somebody upstairs watching TV when something controversial happens and gets down to the coach? He says sometimes TV doesn't show it on time. That is true.
That is true.
This case, not the case. Well, it was conclusively shown
also
on replay.
Obviously, this was in Chicago, where home field advantage becomes a factor, because they actually there have been cases where the guy running the big board has not gotten the replay up quick enough for his coach, and the coach chews him out.
But that did happen earlier in the game for Lovie Smith to challenge something, where they put it right up on the board.
That's what I'm saying. That can be a factor.
When I think Kuhn, the fullback, was ruled not down, and he really was down.
Right. Put it right up there. But they're obviously not putting that up.
They're not putting up James Jones holding the ball, by the way, in the wrong arm. He's holding it towards the field. That's where Urlacher can come. What a play he made in the middle of the field.
Also, on the play that was not a touchdown, It was called down.
Right.
He challenged it. He looked to the board. He definitely put the thing out on the board immediately.
I know, but
then he challenged it and he lost that one.
But here's the thing.
Too.
Mariucci says sometimes you don't get the replay on time. Sometimes you're the coach screaming upstairs, what does it say? What does it say? What does it say? And you don't get the right answer.
True.
So that may have happened. But McCarthy said after the game, it was such a big play. I had timeouts left. I figured, what the heck? Because sometimes you roll the dice
what the heck?
But sometimes you roll the dice and you know how many times a ref can go under the hood and see something that you don't even see. Okay, or see something that there's not to be seen, and he overturned something. But that
was
such
a pretty big
play. Did they need that timeout at the end of the game?
Yes, because
boy,
if they
ever need that timeout.
I never understand why
coaches do that. And that's why you, Worm, have already offered, if God forbid Mariucci ever leaves us, to go back to coaching.
I
told him this too. We will set up the replay system for whatever team is. Like, we'll set up the relay that there's got to be a coach on the staff, whether it's offensive or defensive, whenever there's a controversial play. You're watching the television, and you are the one guy that the coach wants to hear from. That's it. It is your job to look at this, and it is your job to know what a replay looks like, for crying out loud. It boggles the mind, and I'm sure Green Bay Packer fans are sick to their stomach today.
That and the way he handled the goal line situation.
Why don't you let him score? You have one timeout
left. Did that in the Super Bowl.
He did. Yeah, but if they let him score on that first down, Aaron Rodgers has 52 seconds plus a timeout left to go down the field and get Mason Crosby, who can hit it from the middle of
They would have had to score a touchdown.
Of the lake.
They would have had to score a touchdown.
That's true. He could have gone down.
Absolutely.
The Jets almost burnt themselves on the reverse of that by scoring the touchdown too early. On the Sunday night game. And the Dolphins came right down the field and almost...
Right.
And almost scored. They would have to have gotten the 2-point conversion.
Yeah, and Lovie screwed that up too. Lovie should have taken knees.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, because they didn't really run the ball that well. What if he fumbles the ball at the one? Take a knee, or you have the ball at the one. Two steps back, knee. Mm. Two steps back, knee.
Real quick, as we, Larry David, who can probably, you're probably the only person here who can match him angst for angst and bitter for bitter.
Yeah.
He's waiting in the wings here on the podcast. Give me your stat.
Oh.
You know the stat? He and Chris Wirtz have come up with a stat that basically assures a fan of knowing your team is about to score and put points on the board. And I got tweeted, somebody tweeted me
during
saying...
During
the Bears game that it happened.
Yep.
Have you heard this stat?
No, give it to me.
If your team, you're on offense, and it's a 2nd-and-15 or 3rd-and-15 plus, and you convert it. Now, you don't have to convert the second down on third down. Just in two downs. If a 2nd or 3rd-and-15 plus is converted on a drive... This week, 17 of 27 drives that happened. Okay? 12 touchdowns, 5 field goals. 63%. Okay? For the season, it's 38 of 61, 62%.
Did that work for both of your teams that you root for?
No.
What are the games?
I don't even know the games. Are you bringing up coach speak? We'll keep Larry David waiting for a minute.
We're
talking coach. Just to let some folks in on this, we constantly use phrases in the office, like I'm sure a bunch of you folks in your offices with your friends throw phrases at each other that are catchphrases or inside jokes. You just mentioned, what are the games? I don't even know the games. Coach speak was, you were the producer,
I was the producer
of coach speak.
Yes, I was.
When we launched in 2003, we had Mike Ditka and Marv Levy break down games in a segment called Coach Speak.
Coach Speak.
Right?
Yes.
And
every Tuesday.
Great name.
And some of the outtakes, we still have carded up. Mike Del Tufo has our sound man. Extraordinaire, not just for NFL Network, but for this podcast as well. I won't have anybody else working the board. That's not true. That's actually not true, but I do love Mike. Mike, card up some of the outtakes here that we love.
Hey, what are the games? I don't even know the game.
Now, you as a producer here, Mike Ditka, one of your talents, say, I don't even know what we're about
we
to talk about
spend,
right now.
This is no joke. This is no joke. We would get on the phone on Monday, okay? It would be a three-way conference call. We'd yap about
Marv,
the games.
Ditka.
Marv, Ditka, and me, okay? Mm-hmm. And we just, and they were unbelievable. I'm just not joking.
Where did the tapes
were
live that
amazing.
One?
They were amazing. They're just talking back and forth. The two of them.
Which is what we want. That's
they
the TV show
amazing.
We want. That's
right?
The segment we want.
What were they talking about?
They were talking about the games. If it was like Bears, Packers.
But they're talking about, they didn't know the games.
They were talking about the games.
What are the games?
We'd preview all the games.
What are the games? I don't even know the games.
Like this game, like that game. And this is no joke. The next day, they sit down. And Ditka, this guy, what are the games? What are we talking about?
As if the conference call never happened.
Like, what the hell? I'm like, let me
hold on, Mike.
What the hell's going on?
Worm, let's Mike.
We spent an hour.
Card up some more. What else do you have for me?
Can you pick it up?
Can you pick it up? Say that. Give me that again. Can you pick it up?
Can you pick it up?
Now he's asking basically when he messes up something, can we pick it up from there? Right? Can we
have an editing? Yeah, he was editing a jigsaw puzzle that was tossed into the Hudson. Okay.
That's no good. We have some Marv in there. Let's get some Marv Levy from Coach Speak, Mike. Let's hear this.
This is my friend Marge. I ain't don't look on Marge. Let's do it again.
I'll call you Myrtle.
You messed that one up.
It got so bad by late November. Okay, Ditka had knee surgery or hip surgery. Okay, so he was on crutches. And then that week, or that the day before, Marv was living in Chicago at the time. Mm-hmm. Marv slipped on an icy sidewalk in Chicago and busted his hip. Right. So you had these two guys who were completely gimpy. It was that vision.
Didn't we have Dan Jiggets sitting for him one time?
Yeah, who was our
Jiggets
guest?
I think Dan Jiggets was the guy.
Where did I pull that from?
That was a good one. I still have his number somewhere.
Went from what are the games to who is the host?
Who is the host? Good gracious. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know what I think from now on, when I ask you to give the NFL replay promo?
Yes.
I think we should play Ditka. I don't know the games. What are the games?
What are the games? I think you should do it.
So here we go.
There
we go.
Green mechanical bird.
Hold on a second. Let's do this properly.
Okay.
Mike Del Tufo, card it up.
Okay, what are the games? I don't even know the games.
What are the games this week?
Tuesday, 8 o'clock. Green mechanical bird at aquatic mammal.
Okay.
Then the 9:15 game
Jets Dolphins, for those who are not worm conversant.
Is Dirty Bird at Fleur de Lis.
Okay.
Which is a fabulous game.
That's Falcons Saints.
Fabulous. One of the best games of the year.
We talked about that with Drew Brees already on this broadcast.
Wednesday is the said Packers v. Midway Ursine.
Okay.
And then 9:15 is the Lightning Bolt v.
Chargers.
Seahawks with Pete Carroll wired up.
Pete Carroll wired
good
for sound. All right, so those are the games.
Yes.
All right, Worm, you're getting pizza from Papa John's.
Pizza!
Well done.
I love pizza.
Drew, thanks for everything we do with this podcast and all the network, and we look forward to having you back here. That's the Worm and Drew Olmeyer here talking hot NFL topics on the Rich Eisen podcast presented by Papa John's. Coming up next, Larry David. Don't you dare move.
Play can change the game. One new channel will change Sunday afternoons forever. This season, watch the best plays as they happen live in HD. NFL Network Red Zone. Every touchdown, every game.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen podcast presented by Papa John's. The music essentially tells you all you need to know about who our next guest is, but I'll still give him the introduction he deserves. He is the creator and executive producer and lead actor on the funniest show on television, Curb Your Enthusiasm, also the creator of the funniest show perhaps of all time, Seinfeld, and a big-time Jet fan, Larry David, here on the Rich Eisen podcast. LD, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I don't know if you're aware that music is in the NFL Films library. Are you aware of that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes. So perhaps, the John Facenda voice would actually go well with that song. I bet you probably never even thought that either.
That never occurred to me.
You're learning here on the Rich Eisen podcast.
What else did John Facenda do, by the way?
He was actually a news anchor in Philadelphia.
Okay, that's where they got him from.
So he basically, at one point, probably did say, when we come back,
yeah,
it's the five-day forecast here. And Steve Sable once told me, Larry, that he has outtakes of John Facenda cursing up a blue streak.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
I would love to hear too.
Just, by the way, are there any language restrictions on this podcast?
No, go ahead. Do whatever you want to do.
We'll
bleep it. It's the internet. I mean, we'll find out. It is the NFL, but anything goes here on the internet.
Okay.
From what I'm told. What do you think of your Jets, LD? That was a heck of a game Sunday night, don't you think?
By the way, I have to watch those games by myself.
Is that right?
Yeah. I find that when there are people over, mm-hmm. It's too distracting for me. I can't really concentrate on the game and get into it. There's too much talking. So I really would rather hear what Chris Collinsworth has to say than some idiot friend.
Basically, you don't want to just having to be sociable. You just want to remove that from the equation.
Exactly. I want to focus and zero in
on what's going on with your Jets. And
yes.
When you zero it, because that was going to be my question, is how you watch these games. Where do you watch them? In a specific room in your house?
I watch it in that, what you call the room next to the kitchen, the family room.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I watched it there.
Okay. And so then if I invited you to come to a house where there's a...
I would not like it. I've never enjoyed a Super Bowl.
You've never been to a Super Bowl party, or you just can't enjoy that sort of thing, is what you're saying?
I don't enjoy the game when I watch it with a bunch of people. That's why Super Bowls, they're awful. Because all of a sudden, I'm looking, how'd they get to the 12-yard line? Where have I been?
Right, where have you been? And for my job, believe it or not, I miss pretty much 5 minutes of the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl all the time because I'm stuck in an elevator trying to get down to the field.
That's horrible.
So I come back on the field, and I'm basically, when the Steelers were playing the Seahawks, I'm like, when did the Steelers go up by 10? I was stuck in between floors 3 and 2 of Ford Field, basically.
And by the way, I went to the Super Bowl. The one the Giants won?
Yeah, in Arizona.
In 2007?
Right.
Yeah, the one in Arizona. And I didn't enjoy it at all.
Why not?
I'm used to watching games on television, and being there, it's not the same. You really don't see what's going on.
Well, be honest with you, the league is very concerned about that. And that is why Jerry Jones in the new Cowboy Stadium built a huge ass screen that goes from the 20 to 20 because a lot of people like watching the game on a high definition screen. So he literally built a 60 yard long high definition television. So maybe you can go to the Super Bowl this year and Dallas.
Yeah, you know what? God willing, the Jets get in.
Yes. God willing. But hey, let me tell you something. The way Sanchez looks over the last two weeks, I mean, where did this come from? You didn't look like this on the first Monday night of the season.
Very, very impressive. Especially that drive at the end of the game. The Jets never do that.
Mm-hmm.
They always give the ball back historically.
Do you have the trapdoor mentality of the typical Jet fan that you're expecting the 100-pound anvil to come in from out of nowhere and just...
By the way, I had that with the 98 Yankees,
Mm-hmm.
That is my mentality as a fan.
Oh, in general, not just the Jets.
Yes, in general. It's not just the Jets.
Uh-huh.
I have it all the time, no matter who I'm rooting for.
It's just the general sports aspect that you have watching.
When the Yankees were up 3 games against the Padres in the World Series in 98, I still say, the Padres win this game.
Right, but they had already won 124 games
exactly.
That year.
Exactly.
You're good.
Of course, I thought they were going to lose that game last night.
and they came through that last drive, 12 plays, 80 yards, most of it on the ground. LaDainian Tomlinson looks super as well.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. Although Green is starting to come around now, I think.
So, who would you rather have the ball in your estimation?
Green.
Really, over LT?
I think so.
No kidding. And what do you think of Rex Ryan? What are your thoughts on Ryan, Larry?
I love him. I think the biggest mistake he made was to allow the team to get filmed for that HBO series.
Really? You didn't like the Hard Knocks idea?
No, I don't. If I was the coach, I never would have allowed that.
Why?
Because it's an invasion of your privacy.
But you're welcoming
you
that.
Would you want somebody in your house?
No, absolutely not.
Well, that's what it's like, and I don't think that. I just think it takes away from the focus of that a team needs when they're preparing for a season.
But in a way, the coaches who do it, their mentality is that it puts the onus on the players to be performing at its highest because there are cameras around, that the eye in the sky is constantly around them. That's their mentality. But you don't agree with that?
No, not at all.
And Rex Ryan made Susie Essman seem like a nun. The way he was cursing up on HBO.
Yeah, well, I'm sure everybody talked like that.
Yeah, I, because, you know, Tony Dungy was complaining about Rex's...
By the way, Joe Girardi bringing Tony Dungy into the locker room?
Mm-hmm.
Please. Do you think they need Tony Dungy talking to them? How ridiculous. What was he supposed to tell them?
Well, Tony knows about winning a championship. He knows about facing adversity.
Yeah, as do the Yankees. They won the World Series the year before.
So you don't... Is it just Tony Dungy you didn't like him bringing in? Or just the general concept?
I didn't bring anybody in. That's ridiculous. Newt Rockney could come back from the dead. I won't allow him in.
So I love it. Solitude is what you think is important so far, from what I'm saying. Solitude when you're watching a game. Solitude when you're trying to win a championship. And certainly when you're trying to go about your business, you don't want the HBO cameras in there. It's all about the solitude, from what I can gather.
Yeah, definitely not. It's just it becomes a show. Mm-hmm. You're putting on a show. You're not really being yourself when there are cameras around.
Now, when you're watching a game, do you look at the game and see a job on the field that you think you can do?
Oh, are you serious?
I'm serious, yeah.
Okay, first of all, there's no question in my mind, no question in my mind that I could be an offensive coordinator.
An offensive coordinator?
Absolutely.
What makes you think that?
I'm very imaginative and creative. I know from when I played football when I was a kid how I would make up plays, you know, in the sand, and you do this and you go there, and I had great plays.
What?
I could give you 10 plays tomorrow that I know would work.
That you know would work against a specific...
Listen, I would just need to observe and get some, you know, and get a little experience.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm sure that I could do it.
So,
and I feel like I could be a defensive coordinator as well.
So you could coordinate both sides of the football.
I think so, too. I'd be better offensively, but I could also do a good job defensively.
What style of...
And then eventually, after a couple of years, and if I don't, I go for head coach.
You'd go, just because but you do realize you have to pay dues, right? So that's where you work from the coordinator up to the top job.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And you called Tannenbaum. I know you called the Jets general manager a few years ago when they were at the top of the draft. Can you retell that story for those who may not know that you tried to put the Larry David influence on how the Jets actually drafted?
I wanted the Jets to trade up.
Mm-hmm.
To get Reggie Bush or Vince Young.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, hey, well, what the hell? Maybe this Tannenbaum, you know, he's got a Baum at the end of his name. He might be, he could be a fan.
Mishbucha is what you're saying.
He could be a fan.
Uh-huh.
There's a good chance.
Uh-huh.
So I told my assistant, just try this. I have a crazy idea. I want to talk to the general manager of the Jets. And she got him on the phone. And he took the call. He got on the phone.
Of course.
And we started talking. And he told me in no uncertain terms that it was not going to happen.
Did he let you down easy, Larry, at least?
Yeah, no, he was very sweet. Very nice. Invited me to a training camp and all that. And,
mm-hmm.
and I went to a game last year, and I met him and Woody Johnson, and had a great time. Although they lost that game.
Which game was that?
It was the Buffalo game.
Yeah, they always have trouble with the Buffalo Bills.
Always.
Then they got them next week.
I know. Always.
They're at Buffalo next week, and because I know Tannenbaum's a fan of yours, because I was mentioning your show to him at a combine a couple of years ago, and his eyes lit up. He's the one who told me that you called him, and Mangini, who was right there, you know, who hardly ever says a word sometimes. He lit up too, and I remember we brought the two of them into your edit bay.
They came to L.A. a few years ago. Mm-hmm. To say hello, and I brought them upstairs to watch a show, and they were very entertained by it.
They enjoyed it, big time. And I think you should get Rex on one of your shows during the off season at some point. I think that would be a good fit. Not far be it for me to tell you what to do with your great program, but I think Rex would be good, don't you think?
I don't know exactly where he would fit in.
You don't think so?
But
you never know.
You never know who you could use.
Well, you used McEnroe. You used McEnroe a couple of seasons ago.
Right. That's true. Well, he fit into a specific niche.
Where you drove him around, if I'm not mistaken, as his chauffeur?
Is yeah, that... exactly.
So many people want to know, how much of Curb is ad-libbed? Can you put a percentage on that?
Probably 80 to 90%.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. I mean, and the
I would say 90%.
The idea behind that is what? You think you get better stuff because it's just off the top of the head of you and the rest of the actors?
Yeah, it makes it seem like it's really happening, and because it is in a way. Mm-hmm. And also, you notice that one of the things it does is that it allows people to actually laugh. Because laughing, when you watch movies and television shows, you can notice that not that many people really laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because everybody's saying clever things all the time. So what this does is that you're surprised by what people say. And so you can actually laugh at it.
Who makes you laugh the most on that show?
Boy, that's a tough one. Probably...
Is it J.B. Smoove? Because he makes me laugh.
Yeah, it's Leon. Yeah, Leon really makes me laugh a lot.
He's pretty funny.
Yeah, we have...
Is he back for season 8?
He will be back.
Thank you. Thank goodness for that. That's fantastic. Is there any other hints you can give us for season... I know you're shooting in New York. I know that's out in the open.
We shot 5 shows in New York.
How was that for you?
That was so much fun. And it's really amazing, the difference between shooting in New York and L.A.
What's the differences?
Well, you know, when you shoot a scene in L.A., if we're outside somewhere, a few people might walk by and just kind of go, what's that? Oh, Kirby, do that, and they'll walk on. Like, they're not interested at all.
Right.
In New York, there are throngs of people watching the scene. It's crazy.
I think because obviously you've never shot there before, right? It's always been shot in Los Angeles.
Never shot there.
Right, so that's a new thing. And secondly, just the angst that the show always has twisting around it, I think just hits the nail right on the New York head.
Yes, it definitely appeals to New Yorkers, no question about it.
You know, I mean, the fact that, you know, it seems that most of the people on the show are transplants in real life, right? Would that be correct?
Yeah.
Although L.A., if you think about it, is an underrated, angst-ridden place. So many people think that we're laid back out here, but there's a lot of angst here. I mean, I get flipped off on the road here more than I do in New York City. Maybe that's my driving. You feel differently?
No, I think generally when I drove in New York,
yeah,
I think I got in more fights.
No kidding.
Oh. Yeah, I think I screamed every time I got in the car. In New York.
But out here in your Prius, you're just a little bit more chill? Is that what
you're saying? You know what? Mm-hmm. Because not as many people break the rules here,
mm-hmm.
So you're more inclined to not go wide on the left turn.
Uh-huh.
So you'll get in the line.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in New York, you don't have to get in the line. Nobody
Never.
Gets in the line.
Never. It's amazing how people just line up comfortably here to exit places.
I know.
That never happens in New York. You're right.
I mean, what I do here sometimes is I'll go across the light,
mm-hmm.
and then make a U-turn.
I'm with you. I do the same thing.
Yeah. I don't feel right somehow making the wide left here. It feels wrong.
It does.
I'd rather go across the street and make the U-turn.
I feel like I'm breaking some of the fine print in the social contract out here. I agree with you.
I know.
And that's what I love about your show, Larry, is you do mind the social contract for the fine print on Curb Your Enthusiasm. You obviously did it on Seinfeld as well. So I would love for you, I'm going to give you a couple of scenarios. I'd love for you to play the social judge and jury on these scenarios.
Okay,
here we go. Larry David, you're the social judge and jury on destination weddings. Okay. If I am schlepping to go to a destination wedding.
A destination wedding. Are you saying that the wedding is not in town?
It's not in town. I've got to go out. I've got to hop a flight.
So the couple, they live from Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and they're having a wedding in Mexico?
That, for instance, yes, that okay. has happened. That has happened. Another one, if they live in New York, and I live in Los Angeles, but they make me schlep to Florida, say, okay?
Got it.
Destination wedding.
Okay, all right.
I go all the way to this destination wedding. Am I still required to get a gift for the bride and groom?
First of all, you're not even required to go.
I'm not even required to go.
No, you don't even have to go to this wedding. If you have to travel more than an hour and a half,
yeah.
2 hours, you don't have to go. These people are asking way too much of you for what appears to be only a 50% chance that this thing is going to survive more than 5 years.
So second marriage is at a destination wedding. Forget it. That's just never going to happen.
Never.
Okay, so I'm not even, forget about getting a gift. I'm not even required to go.
You're not even required to go. The gift is a bonus.
So is there a cutoff point? Is it an hour and a half? Is it a 2 hour flight?
I think 2 hours, a 2 hour drive at the most.
Okay. And so that means a flight's out, because usually it takes a half an hour to get to the airport.
There should be an apology in the invitation. we're sorry. We couldn't find any other place. We really looked hard. We've done everything. This is the best we can do. If you can't come, we completely understand. If you do, thank you, but don't feel you have to.
That should be written on a card.
That should be on the invitation.
Along with the directions if you too care to actually get
exactly.
up. Okay. All right, so that's the destination wedding. Here's another one. Hello at work. Okay. I'm at work.
Yes, we covered this on Seinfeld.
Oh, we did? Okay, great.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello at work. I see somebody at work.
You do your first nod in the morning.
Right, and then I see them 20 minutes later, I see them an hour later, 2 hours. Am I required every time I see this person to say hello every time?
It's very hard to avoid the hallway nod.
Yes.
It's very hard to avoid it.
So the hallway nod every time.
There's nothing you can do, really, about the hallway nod, because if you look away, if you look straight ahead, it's kind of odd
mm-hmm.
that you're not making eye contact. What you can do as you're passing, go, obligatory nod, just say it to them.
Have you ever done something to avoid the obligatory nod? Act like your phone is wrong, or you forgot something at your desk and walked away, even though you didn't forget something at your desk. Have you ever done that?
I try to do a self-conscious obligatory nod, so they know that I'm nodding obligatorily.
Oh, so you, basically it's their fault for running into you again in the hall.
No, there's a little shrug in my nod, if you can picture it. Like, I know I have to do this. Here's my nod.
Right. So it's a half nod, half shrug.
Yeah, it's a half nod, but it's broadcasting somehow that I'm aware how silly this nod is, because that's already said hello to you.
Okay. Which Jeff Seinfeld episode was that?
I don't remember, but I do remember okay. a reference to it.
Well, this last one, you touched upon it in a Curb episode with Richard Lewis, and it's the cell phone etiquette.
Right.
Now, the question is, I call you on your cell phone.
Wait, where am I?
You're in your car.
I'm in my car. You've called me on my cell phone?
I have.
And I'm in my car.
Yes, that is correct. And I'm on a landline. I'm landlining you to your cell phone.
Okay.
And the call drops.
Right.
The call drops. Who is required to reestablish contact?
Landliner.
But even because I'm the one who's got the why is that?
Because I'm in the car and it's not so easy for me to dial back.
What do you mean it's not? Because you're.
Because I have a cell phone. You're not supposed to be texting and making cell phone calls in the car. It's somewhat dangerous. And anybody who's not in the car always has. It's always incumbent on them to be making that return call.
Okay, so now let's say I've contacted you on your cell phone. You're walking the street, so your hands are free. Your hands are free.
My hands are free. Okay, go ahead.
And I'm landlining you on your cell phone. Am I still even required to call you back? Because I was the one who created the initial contact. I'm the one trying to reach you. Am I still incumbent upon calling you back, even though you're the one whose cell phone crapped out? Who's the one who's supposed to call back?
The caller.
The caller.
Yes.
Interesting.
You've called me. You want to get in touch with me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, I do.
You're the one who's interrupted my walk. I'm taking a beautiful, lovely walk.
You are.
Something I don't do that often. I'm admiring the scenery.
You're taking in the air.
I'm saying hello to some pedestrians.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
You're a popular man.
I'm having a wonderful day. You're interrupting this beautiful moment I'm having.
Fantastic. See, these are things that happen to me all the time. And now I know there's no way I'm going to a destination wedding again. And as a matter of fact, I'm upset that there's no apology inside the envelope that's inviting me to this destination wedding.
You should be. And by the way, you call me anytime with any of these questions.
Fantastic. I love it. Before I let you go, I do have to hit you on Seinfeld, though, Larry. What's your favorite Seinfeld episode?
It's a tough question, but, you know, the one that always seems to rise to the surface when I'm asked that question is the Keith Hernandez episode.
The
hour-long Keith Hernandez show.
That was the back and to the left, the JFK
right.
parody.
Right.
The magic loogie.
Yeah, the Vandalay Industries.
Oh, God. That's one of the funniest endings.
George running out of the
bathroom. Yeah, splayed out on the ground with his pants around his ankles.
Right.
And then the line of, and you wanted to be my latex salesman.
Right.
Although my favorite ending to a Seinfeld episode could be the one where George is the marine biologist.
I knew you were going to say that. I was just thinking of that.
Why is that?
Because it's mine too.
That's I mean, did he ad-lib that, or was that all written?
No, that was written.
I mean, just the sea was angry, my friend.
Yeah.
And what is it, like an old man returning soup at the deli?
Yeah, that's how... yeah.
And then that has the line at the end, too, the kicker, the button, too, is from Kramer asking if the ball was a Titleist.
Right, right.
Because that's a great golfer. That's an inside gag for golfers, too, because we all wonder whose ball it is.
Right.
That's fantastic. But so you like that ending as well, is what you're saying.
I thought that was a great ending. There's another great ending we did, which was... They're real and they're spectacular.
Oh, that is a great one, too.
The Terry Hatcher ending.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's amazing. And the yada, yada, yada episode, too, that few people realize that's also the anti-dentite episode as well.
Yeah, although I was not there for that show.
You were not there for that show.
No, that was done
post-LD,
the year after I left.
The year after you left. And it's amazing how... the Tim Watley character, Bryan Cranston, is now a three-time drama Emmy Award winner.
Right.
How he's done that. And are you amazed by the popularity of that show still, too, Larry? I mean, it's been 12 years since a fresh Seinfeld episode's come out, and that's not counting, obviously, the faux, I guess, reunion that you had on your show last year. But are you amazed by the popularity, how this is still lasting?
You know, I don't... think about it very often,
mm-hmm.
But now that you mentioned it,
yes,
yeah, I guess I am. But look at I Love Lucy. That's 60 years now.
That is true. That is true. And I guess would Fred Mertz be the Kramer character? Would that be
Kramer? That? Kramer would be Fred Mertz. Yeah, he'd be Ed Norton.
Ah, Ed, that's right. The way Ed would just come and go as he pleased.
Right.
As he pleased. Larry, I really appreciate the time. I know you don't do this a lot, so I appreciate you helping me with my social mores and helping get my head on straight about some things. Because my wife thinks we should still send gifts to destination weddings, and I have had arguments with her about that.
Please tell her what I said about this.
I'm going to pass that along.
I'd be happy to talk to her.
That would definitely help. I think that would definitely help. Larry, thanks again. We appreciate it. And so when does season 8 come out? Is it
probably March or April?
Okay. Terrific. so many people, not just including myself, look forward to that. Such huge fans of the show, and obviously Seinfeld as well. And good luck to you and your Jets.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Pleasure.
You bet. Same here. That is the one and only Larry David on the Rich Eisen podcast.
That was fantastic. It's going to be tough to top this show, but you know what? That's why we have podcasts. That's why we've got iTunes and NFL.com. That's why we lift all these scripts here on NFL.com.
It's to continue on and keep this podcast moving in a positive direction. Have I used all the cliches? My favorite coaching cliche? I don't have a crystal ball. That's a good one. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know how this thing's going to keep going. I do, actually. It's going to be better next week and weeks after. So I always appreciate your support by downloading this at on iTunes and also on NFL.com, my blog page, RichEisen.NFL.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Rich Eisen and also on Facebook.com/RichEisen. And again, thanks to the folks at Papa John's for their sponsorship. This is another edition of the Rich Eisen podcast done, but the very first Rich Eisen podcast presented by Papa John's in the books.